buscar, de localizar, porque también hay una situación como de incertidumbre, ¿no? Respecto a qué sucede con sus hijas, ¿no? ¿Qué sucede con los protocolos? ¿Qué sucede con el acceso a la justicia? La sociedad tlaxcalteca es una sociedad que ha normalizado las violaciones a derechos humanos porque además no confía en sus autoridades. Por lo mismo, ¿no? De que hay patrones sistemáticos de conducta dentro de las instituciones que revictimizan a las familias, pero además le dan un mensaje de permisividad a los agresores. Entonces, finalmente las familias han optado por hacer por propia cuenta las investigaciones, hacer por propia cuenta la búsqueda, y generalmente es durante las primeras horas. Los casos que han sido localizados es que las familias se organizan desde el primer momento que tienen la notificación,
¿no? Se ha documentado también que las autoridades no solamente no investigan o empiezan a investigar 3 días después de ocurrida la desaparición, sino que también pierden evidencia, ¿no?
Pierden evidencia, intimidan testigos, no activan los mecanismos básicos como es el protocolo de la alerta AMBER, desconocen cuál es el funcionamiento, cuál es el mecanismo, y una serie de negligencias sumamente importantes, y que el juez de amparo que protege y ampara a Carla Romero, y que por lo cual es la única averiguación previa en todo el estado por el tema de desaparición, ha sido muy puntual en ese sentido. O sea, el juez de amparo señala que no únicamente hay acciones y omisiones violatorias a derechos humanos, sino que hay una cuestión de obstaculizar la búsqueda, obstaculizar la investigación. Entonces, eso es trascendente en el tema de, bueno, cuáles son las deficiencias y qué es lo que se tiene que mejorar. La no declaratoria de alerta de género no contempla estas deficiencias estructurales, esas deficiencias sistemáticas, estos patrones de conducta al interior de las instituciones. No significan un cambio radical en la vida de las víctimas.
¿Las víctimas quiénes son?
Pues mira, lo que hemos documentado en el tema de desaparición es que son sobre todo adolescentes entre 14 y 16 años de edad.
¿Indígenas?
Claro, bueno, muchos de esos municipios son pueblos originarios, no todos, pero muchos sí lo son, pero sobre todo son mujeres pobres. Son mujeres que desaparecen cuando se trasladan hacia su trabajo o hacia la escuela. Son mujeres que están en una edad vulnerable, y sobre todo son mujeres, bueno, son adolescentes que iban solas, ¿no? Que iban solas, que tienen una rutina, y que justo estos factores como el ir sola sin protección, no únicamente la protección de ir acompañada de alguien, sino la no protección por parte del Estado, facilita, ¿no? que sean llevadas sin su voluntad, o por otra parte son coaccionadas mediante el enamoramiento. Eso es algo que no se reconoce, ¿no? No se reconoce que también hay un modus operandi, hay diversos modus operandi, pero de los más comunes es o te la llevas por la fuerza, ¿no? En donde no le tienes que invertir todo el año de enamoramiento o los meses, ¿no? Porque justo es mucho, cada vez es mucho más recurrente que sean llevadas por la fuerza, porque esos patrones de impunidad generan que ni hagan el mínimo esfuerzo, pues, ¿no? Por llevárselas coaccionadas, ¿no? Psicológicamente. Pero bueno, no se reconoce esta parte del enamoramiento, del enganche vía Facebook, del enganche vía redes sociales, del engaño a las familias, ¿no? También tiene que ver estos dos patrones. No se reconoce esta forma de operar del crimen, pero sobre todo tiene que ver con un mensaje de permisividad por parte del Estado. El hecho de perder evidencia, pero además invitar o coaccionar a las familias a esperarse 72 horas, revictimizarlas, señalar públicamente que se van con el novio, basar las búsquedas en una cuestión de estereotipos de género, pues genera un ambiente de impunidad, de permisividad, y obviamente genera esta cuestión de desconfianza, y es por lo mismo que las familias prefieren evitarse ese vía crucis y buscar por propia cuenta.
La mayoría de las mujeres desaparecidas en Tlaxcala, en el llamado corredor de la trata, terminan en Estados Unidos, según la Comisión Nacional de Derechos Humanos y la ONU. Miriam Pascual es un llamado a los hombres en ese país del norte a no acudir a lugares donde se explota sexualmente a niñas y mujeres.
Es importante, ¿no? La parte medular también no es únicamente una responsabilidad del Estado, es también una responsabilidad respecto a quienes consumen este tipo de delitos. En este caso, el trabajo sexual es un tema sumamente importante. No sería el segundo negocio más lucrativo después del narcotráfico si no hubiese una demanda alta respecto al trabajo sexual de niñas y mujeres, ¿no? Entonces, uno de eso es no consumir, ¿no? Asumir como esa parte de no promover mediante el consumo la explotación sexual de niñas y mujeres.
Las entrevistas completas con Miriam Pascual y Nayeli Ortiz Quintero pueden ser vistas en la cuenta Facebook del Informativo Pacífica.
El periodista y colaborador del proyecto informativo independiente La Marea, Antonio Maestre, ha realizado una investigación que verá la luz en unos meses bajo el título de Franquismo, Sociedad Anónima. Este pretende arrojar luz sobre las relaciones de las empresas españolas más poderosas con el régimen franquista y el origen de su riqueza. Rafael Cuesta, del colectivo radial Más Voces, amplía la información.
Durante los más oscuros años del franquismo, las grandes empresas de sectores clave como la energía o la construcción forjaban su imperio económico gracias a contratos asignados a dedo en función del trato de favor que recibían por su cercanía al régimen. Algunas de estas empresas usaron mano de obra esclava de los represaliados políticos del franquismo gracias a la Ley de Redención de Penas por el Trabajo. El programa Barrio Canino de Ágora Sol Radio ha entrevistado a Antonio Maestre, periodista y colaborador del proyecto informativo independiente La Marea. Maestre ha realizado una investigación que verá la luz en unos meses bajo el título de Franquismo S.A., que pretende arrojar luz sobre las relaciones de las empresas españolas más poderosas con el régimen franquista y el origen de su riqueza. En primer lugar, nos habla de cómo las empresas se beneficiaron del trabajo esclavo.
Había una cuestión sobre el trabajo esclavo, que en verdad había una ley que se tomó que se llamaba la redención de penas por el trabajo. Era una ley franquista en la que todos los presos podían reducir su pena a cambio de trabajar, ¿no? Entonces eso estaba arreglado, ¿no? Entonces las empresas llegaban allí al organismo que lo gestionara y les cedían los trabajos. Los trabajadores tenían que pagarles, creo que era una cantidad exigua, no voy a decir porque seguramente lo diga mal ahora mismo cuál era la parte, pero además eso iba para el patronato que lo gestionaba, no eran para los trabajadores. Los trabajadores a cambio cobraban, pues, o sea, les pagaban en comida, ¿no? Eso era la parte, la que ya era más conocida, ¿no? Que es, por ejemplo, OHL, la empresa de Villarmir, que, pues, OHL ahora, claro, existe por la fusión de tres empresas que se llama Obrascón, Huarte y Lain. Huarte era una de las empresas que construyó el Valle de los Caídos y utilizó trabajo esclavo y utilizó este programa de redención de penas por el trabajo. Pero esa es la parte ya más conocida, pero es que hay otras cuestiones que, por ejemplo, sobre todo utilizaron las empresas hidroeléctricas y en especial la que es actualmente Iberdrola. Iberdrola antes nace de la fusión de Hidroeléctrica Española, también conocida como Hidrola, e Iberduero. Pues uno de los presidentes de Hidroeléctrica Española, de Iberdrola, era José María de Oriol y Urquijo. José María de Oriol y Urquijo era un falangista franquista de la línea dura de Bilbao, fue alcalde de Bilbao y también fue procurador de las Cortes, ¿no? Pues se decía, cuando hice las investigaciones, se decía que todas las leyes o todas las cuestiones las despachaba Franco directamente con Oriol Urquijo, con el dueño de Hidroeléctrica Española. Él iba, pues, todos los pantanos estos que se decían, ¿no?, que iba a inaugurarlos, iba con él, ¿no? Pero es que aparte, por ejemplo, hay una ley que tengo que investigar y que tengo que incidir mucho más en ella. Pero una cuestión, por ejemplo, como procurador de las Cortes, se promulgaban, y el mismo Oriol Urquijo, siendo dueño de Iberdrola, de Hidrola, que luego se llama Iberdrola, promulgó una ley, por ejemplo, que favorecía las deducciones fiscales a las absorciones de empresa. Y esa ley que él mismo impulsó como procurador de las Cortes, luego le sirvió a Hidroeléctrica Española para absorber un montón de pequeñas empresas que en aquella época se daban por concesiones simplemente administrativas de Franco directamente.
Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Tosh Tri y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Whenever we're sailing the high seas in Santa Cruz,
we listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.
And next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3 FM and freakradio.org on your computer, it is, of course, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the August 17th, 2017 show. We're going to be having reports from here and there in Santa Cruz, some earlier reports, which we skipped because of time problems, as well as updates from Marina, where Becky Johnson and Wes White are surveying the demolition or the hauling away of people's homes for those who are living in their vehicles, at least in a few cases, well in advance of the proposed deadline and without any alternative accommodations for those folks, as well as a report from Scott Graham on the history of the Cafe Pergolesi, which is due to close in a couple of weeks, to get the inside story, not just what the Santa Cruz Urinal, by which we mean, of course, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, the fish wrap of note or of record, tells us. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. Want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. No call-in number here. This is a pre-recorded show, but you can leave messages in terms of your reaction to the show. You have updates, perhaps you want to be available for the next show. If you'd like to volunteer to help out with any of the issues that I raise on this program, you can call in at 423-4833, and you'll probably get, if not me, a response from me later. So you might consider that, 423-4833. Free Radio Santa Cruz is still, I have to say, in the process of looking for a studio. There's $100, make that a $500 reward for anyone who can help us find a place that we can lease for a year or get access to for a year. And we thought we were close to getting one. We may still be close to getting one, but I think that offer is still open if you can find us a place. To get more information, go to freakradio.org, which is where you may be listening to this program already, the free radio website, or again, call the same number, 423-4833. I'm not in any capacity official spokesperson for free radio, but I am one of the broadcasters. In the show with the latest update from the Lapis Road struggle, where RV dwellers, since RVs are the 21st century version of affordable housing, are struggling against
bureaucrats and bigots is really the way I like to describe it, who want to remove them, masquerading, of course, as law enforcement officials or in the guise of law enforcement officials and public health officials, not providing any real public health, just a lot of public blather. Activist Becky Johnson, whom I call Beggarbacker Becky, who has been a longtime writer on homeless issues and currently tweeter on homeless issues, and she may go and get into that and give you some information on how to reach her. She's going to be talking to you about the latest happening on Lapis Road. At the end of the show, we're going to have a kind of an emergency update that she called in later about actual deportation activities and hauling away activities that apparently have begun 2 weeks early at Lapis Road. So let's begin with that. Unfortunately, technical difficulties, and I think it's probably could be laid at the feet of your erstwhile broadcaster here, mean that we are going to not be able to play for you the background that activist Becky Johnson gave us earlier today on the issue at Lapis Road, but rather we're going to skip directly to what I had intended to end the show with, which is her emergency update on what's going on out there, plus an on-the-scene report from Wes White. So we're going to begin with that, and I hope that that hasn't been eaten up, too, by strange technology and stranger folks trying to wield the technology. Well, I just got what's been described as a Mayday call from Becky Johnson in Marina. Hi, Becky.
Hey, Robert. It's 1 p.m. here on Thursday, and I just got a call from a woman out on Lapis Road. Today is the day that the sheriffs and the social workers and everybody's supposed to come through and notice anyone and offer them services and check their licenses and all that stuff. So we were prepared for that. We weren't prepared for them to show up with tow trucks and start seizing vehicles. And they're not just seizing some of those empty vehicles that I was telling you about earlier that apparently don't belong to anyone anymore. This woman called me. Her name's Sarah. She and her boyfriend live there. They have it's one of those little trailers that's like, it's a trailer underneath and a tent on top. It's designed that way, and the police just towed it away from her with all of her possessions in it, and she and her boyfriend live there. Her boyfriend is severely disabled. Both of them say that they've signed up for all kinds of services asking for help. They're jumping the gun here. Wes is out there right now on location, and he's seen a couple of tow trucks in their console at a place.
Well, what I perhaps should do is give him a call and see if I can get him to report what's going on. Or I could call Sarah, the woman you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. She just had her rig stolen, like 20 minutes ago.
Anything else to report before I try and do that?
Just that I called Supervisor Jane Parker's office and got a hold of Wendy, who is her understudy or whatever, and Wendy was unaware of any towing that was scheduled for today.
Do you have the number of Supervisor Parker's office?
I do.
Why don't you give it to
her? Yeah. All right. Hold on a second.
We'll talk to you then, or at least either to Sarah or to Wes in a minute.
Yeah.
Thanks. Great. Get then with Supervisor Parker's number, Becky.
Okay, she's at 831-755-5044.
755-5044.
Correct. That's Supervisor Jane Parker.
Okie doke.
Picking up the safe parking lot for these people. 10 months from now.
Oh, how nice.
Okay, we're going to
go
off air. We're going to go off air to get Sarah's number. Becky, say that again.
I said this is just really a stab in the back here, that they're asking people. You know, they're just showing up with tow trucks and taking people's rigs away 2 weeks earlier than the notice that they gave said that they had to. Because these people, they've been cleaning up, they've been packing up, they've been getting rid of garbage, they've been doing whatever they could to comply with what the county's asking of them. And for them to just show up 2 weeks early and be loading people's rigs onto tow trucks while they're standing there screaming at them not to take their rig, it's just wrong. It's a violation of trust. I don't know what their criteria is for that.
You know, Becky, have you contacted anyone or thought about contacting people to form like the kind of thing that West did a year ago in Chinatown, where massive numbers of not so much unhoused people, but people who are supportive, who have houses, came down as they did to support the opposition to the sitting ban in Monterey. They might be interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess West is probably...
Yeah, we haven't gotten a hold of SCAM, you know, the Direct Action Monterey Network.
Hmm. Okay, I'd never heard of
it. You know, they have like the Highway 8 or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah, that was what Max was involved with.
Right, Max was a defendant in that case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what their group is called, DAMN, D-A-M-N.
Huh, you might want to call Max.
Direct Action Network. You might want to call Max
and suggest he come on out. You know, he's pretty...
That would be wonderful. We haven't been able to contact them about this issue yet. Wes and I got involved kind of a little belatedly, but we're knee-deep in it now. We have at least 12 phone numbers from people that live out there right now.
Well, I'm going to call one of them and I'll see how it goes. Thank you, Becky.
Yeah, thanks, Robert.
All right, man.
Talk to you later.
I'm trying to reach Wes White, the Salinas Monterey County Homeless Alliance, Union of the Homeless Activist, who's...
Hey, Robert, how's it going?
Hey there, Wes. I just heard from Becky. You're on the scene watching the demolition of people's homes.
One got towed away. They're talking about another one getting towed. One was completely gutted. The other apparently has biohazard everywhere. I don't know, you know, how justifiable these claims are, but they're doing it.
How many sheriffs are out there, or what agencies are doing this? Wes? Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, they're here. There's a mile stretch, and we're hardly a third of the mile through, so they're still working on getting down this way.
So what agency is doing this, Wes?
The Sheriff's Department is here. There's a tow company here. The Environmental Health, County Environmental Health is here. And KIOM is here.
And you're there.
Yes.
Yeah, so... What are people doing in response? Whose homes are being threatened?
The one that was already gutted was empty and abandoned and nobody home, so that was an easy cake. The other lady called Becky frantically, about it, and apparently, you know, that's why I went down there. And they're saying it's just too much biohazard, and they're doing it, and there ain't no stopping it.
And do you see a biohazard yourself?
I didn't see. He said all kinds outside, inside. I'm smelling, I don't smell, and I'm looking, I don't see. But the environmental health guy came by, and they checked it out last week, and so it's ready to get took.
Did they give, I guess this is Sarah you're talking about?
I would imagine so.
And did they give her warning? Have you spoken with her?
They talked to her last week. Yeah, she's familiar with them.
Does she know that they're planning to come today? I thought that they were coming for another 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, that's, and I think that's the thing, is that it was not expected to be immediate. But they're claiming biohazard emergency privilege.
And are they threatening other vehicles as well as hers?
Probably as they go down the line, I'm sure they will.
And are they doing some kind of new inspection? I understand they did some prior inspection. Or is this simply a response to the prior inspection in a premature way where they're just going to kind of, I don't know, maybe they'll stop people from organizing against it or stop public opinion from forming against it, though I'm not too convinced that public opinion is supportive of poor people generally. But what's your sense of that?
My sense is that they feel obligated to be here because they said they'd be here every couple of weeks. There's about 7 or 8 deputies out here. Most of them got their little ranch hats on. And, you know, they just have a very matter-of-fact, well, you're gone in 2 weeks. You know, we're here to help, but you got to help yourself.
Are they going to... But if they're saying they're going to tow vehicles now 2 weeks in advance of their deadline, is that accurate?
Apparently there are circumstances that require immediate removal.
According to the sheriffs, is what they're telling you?
Yeah. They said one camper was up on blocks, 4x4 blocks instead of a wheel. So that was terribly unsafe, so they had to pull that one up because they could have killed somebody. And another had been gutted and was left as abandoned, as is their official word for it, you know, so nobody was home for that one. And then this biohazard one, that makes 3 that I know of.
Now we're talking 3 out of 60 vehicles?
No, we passed out 60 flyers. I wouldn't say there's 60 vehicles. So there's a good 30, 35, 40.
And are the other vehicular residents responding to this?
I mean, you know, it's better him than me.
So people are not coming forward and, you know, to protest it or to, you know, at least express concern about their own vehicles? Or are the sheriffs assuring them, oh, no, we're not going after you, we're just going after the bad guys?
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. Well, they're claiming that they're connecting people to services. The Adult Protective Services have been here. The Coalition of Homeless Service Providers have been here. I have to double check on that because when I talked yesterday, either people hadn't even been approached or they weren't interested. But, you know, it sounded very little like people had been approached by service providers.
Well, you've been a person who has sort of tracked down the lack of service providing that was promised in the Chinatown area in Salinas. What do you make of the specifics of the service offerings here? Any particulars you can tell us about actual services that have been promised and actually delivered?
Now, only a story, an anecdote of apparently 4 people have been, or at least 2 or 4 people have been scooped up out of here and placed in a transitional housing. That was from the supervising sheriff of this detail.
What's his name or her name?
Mose or Moses.
I see. He's leading them to the promised dumping ground, eh?
That's it, exactly right. He's parting the Lapis Road Sea.
I see. Or flooding the people with lots of talk and then towing vehicles. What's the name of the towing company that's towing all these vehicles?
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't ever really look.
When you see it, let me know. I'd be curious because there might be some of us who would be interested in having that information.
My body. Yeah.
Now, I was also going to call Sarah, who Becky tells me her vehicle was taken or is about to be taken. Is she in a position to be able to talk now, do you think?
Not at last I checked, and I now have moved on from that position, but I can move back there, I guess.
Well, no, I can. I have her phone number. I just, you know, I want, if she's in the middle of a, you know, I'm not sure if I should do it or not, but I will try giving her a call if she wants to talk about her feelings about what's going on and her description of what's happening. Any any other details? What's the news media doing other than, I don't know, smoking cigarettes?
They're staring, and you know, the video camera's going and being quiet. Being helpful for the county, I'm sure.
Any reaction at all from the other vehicle people? Have they gone into their homes and closed their doors? Have they walked outside with their video devices to video what's going on? Are they planning an immediate emergency meeting because they might be next? What's happening?
That kind of was reviewed yesterday. Most people are just taking it as another day, you know, waiting their turn, I suppose. The sheriffs are coming around. There's a sticker on the back, and now there's a sticker on the windshield. They want to make sure they can see the orange from any direction.
So are they mainly...
Why slap a sticker every week, man? It's like there's already quite a few of them got two. I'm wondering if they're going to do three on a few.
Are they mainly simply providing stickers, or are they...
There's one sheriff. He's looking at a guy, and the guy is giving him a tour of his vehicle right now, and the sheriff's trying to tell him what's wrong with it.
Why don't you follow that for us and tell us what you hear so we can kind of get an idea of what's happening?
All right, well, then you're going to have to shut up and listen.
I will. So we'll need you to repeat it, Wes, because we can't hear it from the distance. Wes, you still there?
Yeah, no, but I'm going to let you listen to the conversation, Wes.
Yeah, just tell us kind of directly what you hear and see happening. You don't have to shout it. You can just talk directly into the phone, and that's, you know, you're a reporter. You're reporting. Report on. Can't hear anything.
Our place is like a housing resource center and stuff. And we'll pay to,
try to speak clearly and not struggle with the phone at the same time, because otherwise it muffles it. Go ahead. Wes? I think we've lost our man. Wes? All right, so I'm going to try to reach Sarah, the woman whose vehicle was either threatened with or has actually been taken, according to activist Becky Johnson. So now we're trying to reach Sarah. And see if we're getting anywhere with that. And we are ringing. But she may be otherwise occupied, which I can kind of...
You have reached the voicemail box of... At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
Hi, Sarah. My name is Robert Norris, and I'm with Free Radio Santa Cruz. Activists Becky Johnson and Wes White suggested I call you to get a sort of an on-the-scene account of what's happening out there on Lapis Road today and how homes are being taken by the sheriffs. That's at least the impression I'm getting from Becky and Wes. Your home particularly was under threat, according to what I heard. My number is 831-423-4833, and if you call me in the next half hour, actually it's now about 1:20, I may be able to put something on our little pirate news station tonight at 6. Otherwise, it'll go on Sunday, and we can at least update folks then. There will be kind of a full account from Becky and Wes about at least what they know, and that will happen at 6. You can go online to freakradio.org if you have computer access, and the radio station unfortunately doesn't go as far as Monterey, but it is a local Santa Cruz station. So again, my number, 831-423-4833. My name, Robert Norris. And good luck.
And pardon the blank space. I thought that particular audio was longer, but there it is. So feel a need to move immediately to support the folks out at Lapis Road. Apparently Supervisor Parker up in Monterey County is supposed to be the sort of go-to person for a... If Becky Johnson is accurate, for a proposed parking area for RV people 10 months away. Perhaps by that time they'll have all disintegrated, disappeared, have their vehicles towed, or, I don't know, died of old age waiting for this to happen. Her number is 755-5044. That's Supervisor Parker at 831-755-5044. And Wendy apparently is the assistant assigned to cover the Lapis Road demolitions, or relocations, if you will. Deportations, use whatever word you like. Again, the number is 755-5044. If you actually get a response, feel free to give me a call here for the next free radio broadcast, 423-4833. And also you can find the... as Becky Johnson may have noted, the Monterey County Union of the Homeless on Facebook, and they can give you the latest updates there.
College, everybody wanna hustle, we don't wanna work hard and try to get it out the muscle. We got welfare and food stamps and diapers in the duffel. First love, let me solo, cause I made a few mistakes. They don't give a fuck about us, all they gon' do is betray. They don't tell us about the aliens that come and visit Earth. They just wanna see another nigga land in the hearse. They don't tell us that we in the last days over here. Spent 2 years in a cell playing spades over here. Every time we go to jail, they getting paid over here. Why you worry about the motherfucking J's over there? We do work, slave work, for the white man though. They go chillin' in the mansion, we chop out the bando. And y'all niggas think it's cool, now they blowin' scouts back. When they put us in the FEMA, it's gon' blow your scalp back. In the book of Revelations, it's gon' tell you about the truth. They gon' chop off niggas' heads, they gon' trap us in the coop. And the babies that we have again thrown in the pit. Demons biting at your skin, Obama chopping off your dick. Martial law, world war, yeah, it's coming, little bitch. Do y'all value what I'm saying? Y'all should know this little shit. Black people, we the ones that really started all this shit. We created all this shit and they just bargained all this shit. They say put your hands up and then they empty out the clip. All this shit was planned out, they wrote it up just like a skit. Yeah, I miss my old home, but I ain't stressing by the bitch. Bad boys so bloody, but them niggas quick to stitch. I did 2 whole years in the prison cell, ho. Graduated high school with a mirror roll, ho. I'm a black educated headband ass nigga. You a 900 talking to the fed ass nigga. We can do it, yeah, we can. All we need is love, faith. You should go and find a job before you catch another case. Cause they wanna see us gone, they tryna kill the whole race. They say freeze where you with it, then they blind you whole face. All you gotta do, believe it's a God in the sky. This ain't all that is in life, we got a job in the sky. Sold my soul to the devil, then I snatched it right back. Sold your soul to a gang, got a bullet right back. I just hope you niggas ready, cause this shit is coming soon. We so motherfucking stupid, we don't even got a clue. But my finger on the trigger, I'm prepared for when it do. But my generation stupid, they don't even got a clue. No surprise if they try to take my life for this song. Bitch, I know I'm going to heaven, nigga, send me on home. I just hope the jury play this shit when God is long gone. Better live it while you can, be this world is long gone. No, no.
Jay Gotti, Black Lives Matter, which you can find on YouTube. And I'm going to be playing some Black Lives Matter themed songs throughout the show. And coming up next, I'm going to be playing also some interviews with Laura Tucker, who actually did the interviewing. She's an activist who's been shepherding the Huff meetings. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's a civil rights group that used to be operational in Santa Cruz. In a way, it still is. If you have Huff-related material, stuff about civil rights concerns for homeless folks, poor folks, I'm still interested, and I think there are others who still are, but we aren't holding regular meetings at the moment, although it's possible we may be at the Sub Rosa next Wednesday, which is where we were meeting on a regular basis every Wednesday at 11 o'clock. If you want more information on that, you should get in touch at 423-4833-423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, or you can get on the Huff email list by sending me an email at rnorris3@hotmail.com, rnorris, R-N-O-R-S-E, and then the number 3@hotmail.com. But here's some interviews with the folks that Laura chatted with at the more recent Huff meetings.
Hey, well, I'm out here with Laura Tucker, downtown Santa Cruz. Laura's been shepherding the Huff meetings and doing some interviews with folks who come to those meetings. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
And you have three interviews from when?
These are from July. They're from the Huff meeting, July 19th of this year. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's mostly David Minton Silva, Cherie, another woman named Laura, and I don't know their last names. And yeah, we were meeting and did some interviews.
Okay. Well, what are you going to start with?
You know, I can't remember which one of these started first, so I'm just going to randomly pick one.
Go for it.
Okay, here we go.
Anyway, David Minton Silva here. I went to Homeless Connection. I was impressed with one thing especially.
Okay.
There were representatives, or at least people from so many different agencies here in the county and in the city. It wasn't just one group of friends showing up for a meeting. It was a wide representation of a lot of agencies. And I think Brent's intention was is that these agencies, when it comes to dealing with homeless issues, talk to each other. And so it was very successful in that respect. As far as what else he had on the agenda, what else he... all I know is that there was a councilwoman, Michelle Arroyo, came there, and we had a fight in front of everybody, and it worked out real well. It was kind of nice. There was a lot of exchange of information and ideas, but there's people that had old information from the way things used to be, and there's people that are right up to the moment. So we had a nice spectrum and good dialogue. And I think that's what Brent wanted, and I think he got it.
Oh, okay. So now I think you're not talking about the Homeless Connect. It's that meeting that happened at the library. Is that right? Upstairs in the library?
Upstairs in the library.
Okay, yeah. No, the Homeless
I also went to Homeless Connect, too, so I'm maybe confused.
Homeless Connect is where you can go if...
Was that mid-county more? Was that more like a...
No, I forget where they gone. Okay, was it the Star of the Sea?
Yeah, it was at the Star of the Sea.
And,
supposed to be really successful.
Right, well, I had heard there was less people than last year, but it's a great place to go if you're having trouble getting a driver's license, if you're looking for all the different things that you have to go a whole bunch of different places for. anywhere. They're all in one place, one-stop shop.
The meeting, what I remember that meeting, I can't remember what much, I know it was a big meeting, and a lot of people volunteered for a lot of things
okay.
that they didn't follow through on.
Okay.
David Minton is over here.
That's the same one?
I went to the homeless
So, this is Wednesday, what is it, the 18th or something like that? Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and we're here with Jam, who is technically homeless, was while you were squatting, and then you've got a friend who's 8 more days, so you want to be out sooner than that.
Yeah. Of the landlord, and I don't want them to be homeless, so I'm just trying to find a place. I can pinch like 200 plus food stamps just to sleep on the floor. I don't need a bed, I don't need a couch, you know. I understand that, you know, due to the housing crisis, that things are really shitty right now for everybody. And if you're like not homeless, you're staying with 200 people. I understand.
And you're also working full-time and commuting?
Yeah, I'm working 40 hours over at this nonprofit in Watsonville. And they know my situation, and they're trying to help, but they don't know what to do about it. Like, nobody knows what to do. I called homeless shelters every day. I called homeless services every day, and I haven't got any luck. At this point, I'm trying to look into, like, a vehicle to just sleep in, because I have my license, just anything at this point.
And do you have anything that you would like to say to, city officials or anybody else who's in your situation or people working on housing issues or...
Definitely, like, build more homeless shelters, because there's going to be more homeless people. Due to the housing crisis, it doesn't make any sense to build a Starbucks or to build all these other stores that put the local businesses out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to create more homeless people because more people are going to be out of jobs. It'd be nice if people could, you know, get back to other people about their homeless situation and get on people. If, like, there was, like, a LGBT homeless shelter as well, because I'm trans myself, so being in a homeless shelter full of men makes me feel threatened.
Feeling safe.
Yeah, feeling safe is super important.
Yeah. Well, and I just heard with this homeless, new homeless census that, the homelessness in Santa Cruz County has grown 100%. Somebody told me that? I don't know.
No,
yeah.
115%?
Yeah. So,
is that it? I hate my...
Because I feel like I want to add to that.
I mean, that makes sense because people are only getting paid $10 an hour. The rent is $1,000 for, like, a couch.
Yeah.
Not even a bed.
Yeah.
People have families to support. Food stamps is only given, like, $20 a month to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, back pay.
No, it's not even possible.
It's not even possible.
There's no working class anymore here.
Once you actually start having to...
I don't know if it helps.
...sleep out on the street, know that you will have the benefit of having more and more tickets so you can be more and more dead.
Yeah. Yeah, like the
you feel more threatened because you have those tickets. Like, I have $600 worth of tickets right now, and I feel really threatened every time I go to sleep. I wonder, am I going to get another ticket from the police? Am I going to get a warrant for my arrest because I'm homeless?
Well, and then there's also the stress of that trying to keep track of your tickets, get to court, makes it very difficult to fight when you're trying to organize. And just the stress of having it, and the opportunities in that. Oh, I think that has my information on the back. No, wait. Oh, no, that's good. Okay.
That's my number.
Okay, and then the other thing is all the subsidized housing that hopefully is being built. My concern is it's going to be sold at market, it's going to be rented at market rate, that the developers are just going to pay the county into the general fund to rent it at market rate. So what about that?
No,
tell me.
No,
I'm not.
Okay, I'd like to say that they're prosecuting and persecuting Sarah and MH Tan because the building in front, John Smith is his name, or John Swift or some name, wants to...
Okay, while we're paused...
Hotel manager.
Okay, I'd like to say that they're prosecuting and persecuting Sarah and MH Tan because the building in front, John Smith is his name, or John Swift or some name, wants the parking lot over there, so he's trying to make up charges, and the City Planning Commission is voting for it, and they're being mean to Sarah and Image Tan, which is taking 50 people off the street and giving them options, and we can go to different classes, we can go to music therapy, we can go to anger management, we can learn karate, or we can have coffee and get free food, and people are learning manners over there, and it's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful place to take 50 people off the street every day. And so the city, I want the city council, I want you, Cynthia Chase, and you, Cynthia Matthews, and you get down with Sandy Brown, next mayor of town. I want you and the city council to all step forward and help MH Tan, because you claim they were a model to you, and you needed more client action networks. Well, I'm hoping that you help MH Tan still survive. Thank you very much, and God bless you, and I hope you find me a home. I'm still looking.
By the corrupt police, they're acting out when
I just feel like we have these bad laws on the books, and we expect our officers to enforce them. What happens when they try to enforce them? It just twists their minds, because these laws are anti-homeless laws. So what happens is that the police officers and the different bureaucrats in the system, they start acting anti-homeless because that's what they're forced to do by these laws. And after a while, it just twists their minds, and so we have a lot of bad behavior towards homeless people. And you know, we've gone too far. We have to turn this around.
Like enforcing everybody out that can't afford the $3,800 a month rent.
Right. And it's against the law to tell someone they have to leave the county. Any bureaucrat that tells a homeless person they have to leave the county know that bureaucrat is breaking the law, breaking federal laws. But they're getting away with it because of these petty, small anti-homeless laws that are in the cities. The cities don't have anything to do with homeless services. They only have to do with homeless rights, and they can take people's rights away. Not legally, but they obviously do. They do it. They've done it.
By bullying the people.
Since happened in Birmingham, Alabama in the 50s.
We're going back in time here. Yeah, you know, I always thought that I went back in time when I visited Alabama. Now I know why. Because here it's the same thing. Same smell. I've lived here for 7 years. Go ahead.
Same
extortion.
It's just the same kind of illegal kind of laws that are just inhumane. That when they're enforced, they just distort people's thinking about each other. It's a shame. We're
destroying lives.
Yeah, and if we don't get out of this, it's not going to be just homeless people. It's going to be some other group, and then another group. Next thing you know, we got Big Brother, and this is what it's an invitation to Big Brother.
It already is an invitation to Big Brother. Big Brother's already got to step in.
Yeah.
From the meeting last night, I don't know when it was actually televised. I don't know what day it was. So maybe they had a meeting yesterday, but I watched it at 2 this morning. So what they said was they are refusing to build any housing here. If they do, it won't be the type that will draw anybody here, which means a bunch of condos at 555 that nobody can afford, and everybody's leaving between 14 and 50 because rent is $3,800 and no one can afford that. The regular workers don't make that, so they're forcing everybody out. That doesn't make any money in making this a retirement village, because they've also forced out the students because there's no housing for them either. They were saying there's 18,000 students, and about half of them had what are the other half doing? I know what they're doing.
Cars.
Vans, which it is legal to do since the Coastal Commission passed that law that Robert appealed. Thank you. God bless you, Robert. You can be 2 miles. Wait a minute. You can be 2 miles within... the coast. Is it 2 miles or 1 mile? It's either 2 miles or a mile next to the coast and live in your van or car, whatever you got to live in, and you know, you can do it while being coastal commission ruling, while being clean. Yeah, they've already told the city no, and the city was said last night that they want to, but the state was going to come in and take over because there is no housing here. They refuse to build a shelter.
Well, the city and the county and the university employees can't afford to live here. And
no.
The state has a responsibility.
Right. And all the teachers are leaving. The teachers, the students, and everybody from 25 to 50 because they're just the working class. So they tried to make this the elite place to be, which we already know that Google has bought out all the property. And what Google isn't buying, let me tell you who is. Four countries are buying it out, and they don't come here, and they don't live here. They just own all the property. Yep, and they're leasing it all. What is it leases? Oh, they were talking about this. They need to get rid of the vacation rentals. Two-thirds of the city is like the vacation rentals.
Hold the rent up high?
Yeah, to keep it up high so that they can't, so nobody can live here. So those are the issues. Now, the way they're doing that is by denying the homeless, by denying anybody housing. If you have a disability, they won't house you. I was told that. I'm going to go by Mary Jane. I was told that, and I had a wheelchair. I could not get housing until I got a breathing machine. Then they said, okay, we'll give you one of our fine city vouchers along with the housing authority and the shelter. They put me into the worst dump that's been condemned years ago because of the bugs, the traffic, the drug smoke, the making of it, the gangs and all that, whatever. It shouldn't be condemned, but they owe the city money, so they won't condemn. In Watsonville, what's the name of that place again, darn it? They have the Appleton Grill there. The Watsonville Hotel? What's it called? Watsonville Inn?
Basically, now the bureaucrats are telling people, if you need housing too bad, we can't give it to you. If you need housing too much, we can't give it to you.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, hold on. But because I had medical issues, the city had, well, they said they had to. Hi. The city said, go do that. And so the city, they said, okay, well, you have to house people. Well, they finally gave me that, but it was horrible.
I still got my floor and my apartment time.
Then they, really? Because I'm going to need that. Hey, really? Because I'm going to need that. No, I'm serious. They're not housing me. They're throwing me out of the rehabilitation home. I won't have my wheelchair.
Enough space.
I won't have my wheelchair.
Enough space for sleeping bag. That's fine. Yeah.
Well,
I have TV.
I might need it.
I have an altar. I have a
I may need a spot because let me just tell you, they're profiling me. Not only did they illegally kick me out of my housing because I have a medical voucher, but they stole my housing while I was in the hospital after being hit by a car. They refused to house me, shelter me, or put me into the RCC, which is designed for people coming out of the hospital until they get other housing. Yeah. Well, I was trying to work on my housing. Here's the next thing. The lady that was working on it quit the damn Center for Independent Living, so now I can't get any help there. I was coming here to the meeting to get help, but apparently nobody's up on anything. So I'm just giving out the information.
We're about rights here, not services.
Right.
Yeah, we're about rights.
But I just wanted to let people know.
Police officer told you to get out of town. We want to know who that police officer.
All right. Well, this place is telling me to leave the county, and I'm not going anywhere.
You can't do that either.
And I'm not going anywhere because I'm not going to accept being lame. They left me lame. The community, what do you call it, dumped me. And they sold my housing illegally, so I'm not going to leave. I'm going to keep staying here until I get my housing back because I'm still on the list for some apartments. And I'm going to get this fixed, so I'll get that fixed, but I was just telling you what they did, so it's not me. And then the only reason that they kicked me out of my housing illegally is because I would not make the shelter my payee. I'm not giving my money to them to put into their bank. They do that to everyone. You know, oh man, this guy had a list too. I don't know who he was, but he had a list, and I'm sure they got rid of it. They probably killed him off. That's my. They tried to kill me by hitting. That car hit me on purpose. But they can't kill me. So. No, they can't. They can't kill you. And anyway, so that was pretty much what I wanted to record. It's a very long recording, but it explains everything that the city's done and doing, pretty much.
I have a criticism.
Okay.
You have a criticism?
No, probably not, but...
It's a criticism I have of everybody, though.
Okay.
Right now. Everybody is using the word they too loosely. We got to start
pinning down who the victim.
Okay. Too loosely, I've committed they crimes. It's this shitty city council in conjunction with the housing authority and the shelter, which was given many, many funds, many billions. Oh, yeah, they stole a bunch of grant money from me because they were supposed to house me and paid for the rent. They didn't do it. They stole the money instead and kicked me out illegally. So when I went to, that was after having my breathing machine stolen, so that I wasn't really clear or clear-headed or knew anything. So they told me to come back. I didn't go back, and then I got hit by a car because the legal aid was going to help me, so I probably should go back there, but yeah.
You got hit by a car on purpose.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because I was talking about to kill off the homeless.
I actually had communication with
him.
So, I was get.
What?
There's conspiracy, you think?
Oh, yeah, I think there's conspiracy because, when they hit me, they refused to transport me by ambulance. They were telling me to get up. You're okay. And then finally, when they took me, they sent me to the doctor and left me, like, passing in and out of unconsciousness from having my leg broke off at the knee.
Oh.
And I had to rebuild my leg, and I woke up, I was like, where am I? And I was like, I'm still in the hall. Oh, man, I was so mad. And I told them to send me to Watsonville, and they wouldn't. It's all kinds of coercion, corruption.
Now, of course, and I'm interrupting from the studio, so to speak, although we don't have a studio. The speaker, I actually ran into her on the street. She was in a wheelchair, and she this was some time before this interview. And she also was concerned about matters politically. She actually talked about running for city council last summer, and I don't know if she actually, she actually filed for city council. But she was a sort of a street voice. And you should judge for yourself of the credibility. It's, of course, hard to do because you're not going to get any referential background or corroboration here. But these are the voices of folks whose voices you may not normally hear. And that's really what this show is all about.
So that's pretty much everything I want to say. What else do you want to say?
Well, I think this report, street report, like so many of them, are indicative of this turn, this tide that's turned. The laws, these anti-homeless laws have been on the books so long now that the entire system thinks this is the way it's supposed to behave. It doesn't even recognize the federal civil rights laws. It's not even recognized that they're committing crimes. These laws are illegal. But we now have bureaucrats and police officers that are becoming criminals.
Yeah, and they also illegally towed my home, my van. So after I got hit by the car, my home was towed. So now I'm homeless again. They refuse to house me, so that's why I'm speaking out.
Yeah, I've been annoyed, right?
But yeah, because I can't take care of myself. I'm still lame, so it's not okay.
Oh.
Yeah, I can't walk around like everybody else, or like I used to. Four and something.
Oh.
So now she's coming. It's going to take her a minute to get tea, coffee, and all that.
I want to talk on
this. Okay, 1 second. Now I'm going to... 1 second. And then the next one is going to... What's your name?
But Laura's supposed to be taking notes.
Sherry. She's got all this recorded. She can take whatever notes. Just keep talking.
Well, anyway, I just wanted to report that at 2:15 a.m. on July 4th, which would be July 5th, the police...
Police
gave me a ticket. My two friends that were standing next to me did not get tickets. Most of the people camping at the Freedom Sleepers did not get tickets. They gave tickets to about four of us, and I was targeted. Once again, I was targeted last week for another ticket for $300. That's $600 worth of tickets. And the police said I was obstructing the justice. I was on the outside of the sidewalk. There was a sidewalk available to walk up to me and give me the ticket, and I said, what am I signing for, robbing a bank or for murdering people? And, you know, I really think that the police had plenty of room to move around, and they didn't ticket the other 25 or 30 people camping there, so they shouldn't have ticketed four people or five people that ticketed last Tuesday night. That's why I didn't go last night, because I don't feel like being ticketed, but I don't feel like being persecuted for having been forced to sleep out in the street because the manager of my apartment hit my car, and I shouldn't be evicted in the first place, but I am, and here I am older than dirt, and I'm evicted. So Cynthia Chase and Cynthia Matthews and everyone else in the city council, I dare you to be evicted and thrown out of your place and try and become homeless for a week. I double dare you.
I dare you to quit your unethical jobs because you own multi-million-dollar real estate agencies.
Okay.
And the kind of cackling voice of Cherie, who just gave her account, is very familiar. She's been a regular attender at Huff meetings. And she also was a regular survival sleeper until police finally intimidated her with two essentially false obstructing the sidewalk tickets. And I say false because obstructing the sidewalk is something that requires there not be a passageway around. And the people who slept out on Tuesday night, and she did that as a matter of principle with the Freedom Sleepers at City Hall, were very careful to follow the instructions of Abby Samuels in every case I've seen to allow half the sidewalk to be usable, and even, of course, even considering the sidewalk is immediately adjacent to an open bricked space which people normally walk through, but the city has suddenly declared it illegal to walk there after 10 o'clock at night, again, with an attempt to criminalize people using the area for a peaceful protest. And she was facing $600 fines. I think she actually is going to court to challenge those tickets, but I don't have a lot of hope for her, but we'll see how that goes.
Oh, good.
Okay. So, Laura, these three or four or five are little bits of interviews and that you did took place over the period of, what, four or five Huff meetings?
No, actually, those were all from the same Huff meeting.
Right, but you actually went to four or five Huff meetings. In fact, you were the kind of the key person who showed up and hung out and made people welcome.
Yes.
And that went on for, what, four or five meetings?
Yep.
What did you draw out of that, if anything, which is perhaps not to waste your time in the Sub Rosa on Wednesday mornings? Or did you learn anything? Did you have anything come out of that?
Well, I really like the Sub Rosa venue because it's a place where homeless people feel comfortable putting down their backpack. They're not going to be hassled. And you're providing the coffee, paying for the coffee, which is really nice. But even if they were to come on their own, it's just $1.50. They have a nice courtyard, whatnot. So we had different people show up at different times. Bob LaMonica a couple times. Sandy Brown showed up once, and that was really cool for her to show up. And Zav and David, pretty regular, like clockwork every time. David was always there. Couple other people that come to mind that I think might be shy about wanting their names talked about or whatever. But and I did a little different than you. It's not a real agenda-driven meeting, but we just talked a lot. So I wish I had gotten more recordings that you could play on the air of, you know, us discussing. But this is kind of a good little sample of what happened. You know, I just kind of had a hang out, drink coffee, and talk kind of format. So, yeah. And happy to keep the flame alive and space open when you weren't able to be there. So, yeah.
Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome.
And unfortunately, my health situation And spotty attendance, although some folks did attend, has kind of put the Huff into hiatus. If you have issues you want to raise and you want to restore regular Huff meetings, call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and it's possible we may reignite the flame, so to speak. Or if not that, at least raise issues outside of meetings, because meetings are, after all, only meetings, and it's what you do outside the meetings that may really count.
Black power. It's a bullshit, death by a bullet. Cops pointing guns and we're yelling, don't pull it. Black lives matter in this country cause who built it? They say we equal but we know that's some bullshit. I hate to say it but I'm starting to see a racist. Everywhere I go want a lot of white faces. Black lives matter but I better never say it. Tell my daughters I love them if I don't make it. Kinda hard being black in America. They shooting first cause I know that they scared of us. But the law they created got niggas scared of us. Back blacks packed front to back on a jail bus. People think we're stupid cause we poorly educated. Black neighborhoods, they get investigated. Most niggas I know either dead or incarcerated. Martin King had a dream, look how far he made it. They take away everything, what can you learn in jail? Whoever designed the system need to burn in hell. Companies getting rich, trafficking convicts. I know it's nonsense, but I bet you didn't know it's real. I'm tired of being judged by the color of my skin. Only time I'm being judged by a white man. I got mad love for my friends and my kin, and I try to pray for whoever I don't like, man. It's some bullshit, death by a bullet. Cops pointing guns and we're yelling, don't pull it. Black lives matter in this country cause who built it? They say we equal but we know that's some bullshit. I hate to say it but I'm starting to see a racist. Everywhere I go want a lot of white faces. Black lives matter but I better never say it. Tell my daughters I love them if I don't make it. They kill my nigga Trayvon. They killed my nigga Michael Brown. Put your hands up, man, they still gon' strike it down. Another black life in the ground. Man, I need 1,000 guns and 100,000 rifle rounds. You murder us, you get a medal. We murder you, we meet the devil. And he the one that's gon' beat the gavel. And make sure we never see tomorrow. And give my family grief and sorrow. Man, I can't breathe with your knees on my neck. You wanna see some registration, let me see some respect. Just like a movie Purge on the streets in effect. So when you see the police, homie, squeeze with a check. But that's really not the way to go. We don't know which way to go. Cause it's all about the paper fold. They enslave the new and take the old. We all hope God save our souls. They rather lock and load. Fucked up. It's some bullshit, death by a bullet. Cops pointing guns and we yelling, don't pull it. Black lives matter in this country cause who built it? They say we equal but we know that's some bullshit. I hate to say it but I'm starting to see a racist. Everywhere I go want a lot of white faces. Black lives matter but I better never say it. Tell my daughters I love them if I don't make it.
And that was Black Lives Matter, Pays to Gator, published December 5th, 2015 on YouTube. The video with it is very striking, quite educational. It carries, or covers the deaths of Eric Garner, Michael Brown, and numerous other historical figures recently in the last decade murdered by the police who happen to be black, coincidentally. Pays to Gator, Black Lives Matter. Brief report from Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, August 12th, 2017.
The 12th, around 6:30, I'm on the line with Linda LeMaster, who's a Santa Cruz expatriate who regularly comes into town. Hi, Linda.
Thank you. I hadn't thought of myself as an expatriate.
Well, you were driven out by rents and bad management, right?
Yeah, probably my own impatience, but I'm in a place that for my lungs, which are my weakest part, I suppose, I'll be much happier and more vital, eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, it started with the fucking $100 rent increase, like everybody else in town's getting, or worse.
That was the John Stewart Company that did that?
Yes. Yeah, even though I supposedly have this protection from the Housing Authority, to keep, with their subsidy, to keep what I have to pay in proportion to my income, somehow they gave me a $100 rent increase in the middle of the so-called year. You get to review what your income is every year, which that makes sense.
At some point, you'll have to do a full analysis of John Stewart. Is it statewide or nationwide? I'm not sure.
Well, I would give Pat and John for that. I don't think they're nationwide, but they're all over this state, and I think they're in Utah, and I know they're in Nevada now. And I wanted to find out if they're in Oregon.
Oh, boy. Like a creeping unknown.
They eat up these subsidized and affordable housing big complexes. Because they know how to manage it in such a way where they get away with things that are a little shady, and yet they can make a little money. And most normal property managers have to pay real wages and hire competent people. Wait, I'm getting into your next interview. Sorry. How about a street report?
All right. Well, I know that there was a six-hour shindig at the post office where Keith McHenry and Abby and a bunch of other folks were trying to sign up homeless people for a lawsuit, which Keith couldn't clarify what the actual lawsuit was going to be about, but I assume it had to do with losing property and harassment for sleeping and that sort of thing.
Well, it looked to me, I did some interviews too, and people that they know as Freedom Sleepers or their allies came down, they were drafting us, and I had that in mind. That's why we came to town today. And it looked to me like the questions would turn toward wanting to do something about the sleeping ban and things like the sitting law. That's my inference now.
And how long were you there for, Linda?
I was there for, a little over 3 hours, I think. And just as I was leaving, I saw John and Pat arrive. They may be helping extend it. But about 15 minutes before I left, Abby Samuels and Chistia Bauman, our attorney for this project, who's down there collecting interviews too, not just sign-ups, but personal interviews that hopefully are confidential now. At any rate, she was down there doing it, and one of the homeless guys came around and said, you know those cops that told us to go over to the park, our belongings would be safe there, we could sit down, chasing us off the street while they're over there taking everybody's unattended property. But some of the people that had come to be in this thing had to run off, and Abby and Tristia headed that way. They were probably at the park by the time I had to leave shortly after.
Interesting, and I'm glad to see that there's I'm glad to see there's on the spot response to a real crisis, which is that's what the police are afraid of, and that's what these authorities will actually will deter them, I think, at least during the period of time when people are present. How many people did you see interviewed when you were there?
Okay. I have a feeling Abby got 10 or 12 or more actual interviews, and she got some partial things that I don't know how to categorize, and she went around double-checking the contact information from the ones people like me had done, just as arriving volunteers. And she seemed to have a lot of court printout information about people that they already know have camping tickets, whether they camp downtown or have been met through enough bombs or not, it seemed like. So she's working closely with Tristia and trying to be real supportive of the two or three of us others who were interviewing. She seemed to know most of the people. I would say at one time, when I started interviewing, there might have been five people, four interviews and one guy waiting. But there were also people camped out there, people that are there. That's where they live right now, at both ends of the post office, not the corner mostly.
Huh. And have you been a regular visitor to Food Not Bombs on Saturdays and Sundays?
No, I hardly ever get to go, but I get there when I can, and I got these beautiful ripe peaches today.
And do you get down to the post office much?
No, but since I put the fence up, I check on it every chance I get when I come to town.
Huh.
In fact, the organization I'm trying to be part of, this group called the Lived Experience Group, I'm trying to figure out how we can get behind and express more persuasive support about giving these public properties back to the people, or at least taking the fence down.
Right, well, you know what they did at People's Park? They tore it down. But then again, that was a different era, perhaps, and people were more straightforward in what they did and wanted to risk more Also, they were younger. I was
people our age didn't have a long rap sheet back then, maybe, too. I don't think that's the main thing. I think people are just, in general, more scared, more quickly chased out of any kind of public life whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion.
So, gosh, I had a question I was going to ask you, but blown away.
I thought it was a pretty good interview for a short screening and tool.
Anything specific come to your attention today that you want to bring up?
I don't think so, but I was really overwhelmed listening to a lot of stories that don't get in the official interviews down there today, talking to people.
Hmm.
I think our interview take time is over because the car's rolling. We'll throw the cars around us.
Are you...
behind the skirt of somebody's after wedding party on the industrial streets on the far west side of town, so I could climb it.
Huh. Do you see much anti-war activity around the upcoming nuclear contest between,
the upcoming
Trump
what contest? I missed some.
The upcoming nuclear war that seems to be...
Didn't hear about it. So a few people down there that might be Quakers or Wolfies or progressive. Helping with the interviews. But,
I'm saying, are any peace activists out? I take it they're not.
I didn't see anything dedicated to peace downtown. Mostly near the post office and the clock in Jamba Juice.
Dig it.
Sing it around.
Well, cool. I appreciate the interview, Linda. And next time...
It's a chance for you to plug Housing Now for me.
Housing Now in Santa Cruz, the famous... minuscule organization that is now larger than Huff.
Well, I can't hear you, and probably that's good. But I have to sign off. Thank you. I'm glad I caught you.
Yeah, you take care.
I hope you're feeling well.
Hey, thanks, babe.
Here's an interview from the week before to round things out.
Okay, well, it's about 220 down on Pacific Avenue on Hiroshima Day, and we're talking with
Kip.
And Kip, you're
for those who don't know, Hiroshima Day is August 6th. That was the day 72 years ago when Harry Truman murdered over 100,000 people in Hiroshima, civilians, with an atomic bomb blast.
Holding food in your hand, which you're about to eat in a... Did you scavenge that from some dumpster? What's going on here?
Oh, no. You know, it's just tourists have leftovers, so if they're going to waste it in the fridge, I figure they should just give it to me. I don't know. I'll eat it.
You offered that service.
I offer the service. I like to remove all food waste that might go in the garbage and use my stomach to do so. And I turn it into compost for the earth.
But do you have a bathroom to deposit it in beautiful Santa Cruz?
No, that's actually a tricky part, yeah. I don't want to talk about that.
You did mention that you have been camping, I would assume, illegally, and yet not been hassled by the rangers or the police, who you say are friendlier than the first alarm on Pacific.
Well, I have noticed since the first alarm came by a few years ago, they seem, I mean, not all of them, obviously, but... It seems like at least the way they're enforcing the policies have changed, that the policies haven't changed themselves, because I'm seeing a lot less harassment by authority figures personally, but not no harassment. There is still a lot of stupid little rules they make you follow. We had to go find some boxes to get our display 18 inches off the ground, etc.
But they didn't immediately ticket you.
Exactly.
That's good. I mean, I noticed very few people in the last... Well, on this long block in front of Forever 21, which is unusual. One guy with a panhandling sign seated on the sidewalk.
There's a huge decrease in the amount of panhandlers and I would say...
Vendors.
And vendors, and I would say also buskers, as in musicians, in the last few years. Yeah, so there's a huge decrease. So obviously... I mean, obviously they have been handing out some tickets, or else I don't think that they would be able to enforce it like it is now, right? But I came in after whatever crackdown they had, so now they seem to have lightened up. There's not too many of us around, so there's plenty of space for us to share. You know, there's not too much conflict regarding these little bumzoo cages they got us sitting in. So, I mean, it's okay. It's pretty, I'm doing it, you know. I'm getting a living. I'm able to enjoy my time here.
How long have you been here this time?
Oh, just a few weeks.
And you're off to Sacramento to begin, you were saying, studying journalism.
Yeah, that's right. And I just, you know, now that I'm in school, I'm no longer applicable for food stamps, so I have to do something to make a living during the summer.
And what do you do?
Well, I guess people's birthdays.
How successful are you at this?
I'm guessing your birthday?
Yeah.
I'm 100% successful every single time.
Really?
I've never failed to guess someone's birthday. If they can honestly answer my 9 questions, I can get it every time.
Are these mathematical questions?
Well, I use cards. I will tell you that the trick itself is mathematical, but I won't tell you more than that about it.
I'm familiar with a similar trick that's used with cards, not for birthdays, but for something else. So I don't remember it. I used to do that kind of stuff when I was younger. Anything has happened to you recently that you think is worth sharing for people on free radio? Personal experiences, new visions, bizarre encounters, or just something you think needs or could be said?
I just want to maybe plug Give Back Santa Cruz. It's a volunteer organization to help clean up Santa Cruz, and it's run by, I think, some tech geeks, some college students, stuff like that. And yeah, it's a good thing to look up, maybe get involved with, to help us keep the city looking nice and pristine, you know.
I may have heard of it. It's not run by the Downtown Association, is it?
Give Back Santa Cruz? I don't believe so, unless they hijack the name.
Mm. Do you know who's... Is it online? Is it on Facebook?
You should be able to find it on Facebook, or find events for it on Facebook.
Okay, well, I may check for that. And we've been talking with...
Kip.
Thanks.
And Give Back Santa Cruz, interestingly enough, seems to be a, if not a production of a guy I used to call Big Drum Brent Adams, because he was in a prior existence, and perhaps still, a drummer on Pacific Avenue. He had a big 50-gallon drum, which was like a large 50-gallon container, and has since been doing a lot of organizing around a warming center. Coalition on Homelessness is one of his recent projects, Sanctuary Village, and I guess clean up the porta potty approach, which he has also worked on. He spoke at the last city council meeting, and he also did a kind of a chicken feed where he provided food the hour before to the dozen or so people who came, according to Jim Weller, who reported on that at a previous show. I'm going to play Brent's comments and those of a few other people at City Council during the doghouse oral communications period. This, of course, was the first council meeting of the fall. It only was an afternoon meeting. There was nothing, essentially, about any kind of immediate action to deal with homeless needs or the police abuse going on a regular basis, masterminded by the city mangler, city manager, Martine Bernal. But the people, I think, with stars in their eyes and illusion in their minds, or maybe they were simply trying to speak to the broader community and hoping that was the point, since these are televised sessions, the 5 o'clock oral communication, where you get 2 minutes or 5 minutes if you represent an organization and contact Mayor Chase beforehand, or at least so she says, although our first speaker, David Silva, claims that that didn't happen for him. Let's hear a little from the Tuesday shitty council meeting. And I use the fecal word advisedly.
And I know that Brent Adams has requested 5 minutes.
May I run again?
Yep, you may. Absolutely. So we will start with David.
And you didn't get the receipt again, request again this time for 5 minutes from...
I did not.
Okay, well, that's good. It's the second time this has happened in a row now. So we'll figure out, you know, what carrier didn't carry what. But 2 minutes. I fast.
And, of course, there's David Silva speaking. And I would have, of course, said, I did send you something that asked for 5 minutes, and I intend to speak for 5 minutes. Let's proceed, particularly since there aren't any, and there aren't enough speakers to fill up the half-hour time. But please make sure your staff is a little more careful in the future. Instead, he simply, well, David's not in the best of health either, and so he may not be interested in going toe-to-toe with the city council or... Also, he may be interested in a more gentle approach. But I always say, if you've sent something to the mayor and she's acted like she didn't get it, but you have evidence that you sent it to her in an email, then you simply proceed as though your permission has been granted. That's what I think you need to do, particularly in these public forums.
This past year, some 88 days to repeal a sleeping ban, lost some 40 pounds. I cannot afford to lose pounds. As a matter of fact, I can't stop losing pounds now that I've started. It's when you're over 70, protein and muscle aren't and fat aren't exactly handled the same. I didn't realize that. I in the middle of my past, May 18, there was a rally out front here. It was a Thursday to support those homeless people that were sleeping, not the activists, but the homeless that were sleeping. They were being kicked at night by goons, and it was a pretty big rally. A man came charging at the rally and tried to pick fights with people. And one guy looks like they were going to fight, so I stepped in between them to break the fight up, and I got sucker punched and laid flat, sent to the hospital. And the police officer who took care of me was Officer Baker, who was very, 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 very good. However, as we proceeded, it turns out that the police, Santa Cruz Police Department, would not give the DA the police... interviews of the witnesses. We said there was no proof of any incident. There was no proof. I got proof of the incident from the Dominican hospital. I got a video. Once I got the video to the DA, all of a sudden the Santa Cruz Police Department was a little more cooperative and said, yeah, perhaps I guess something did happen. Because I showed the video, showed them interviewing police officers. So why the police officer would be covering for this goon, I don't know, unless they sent him. Now, I'm going to my sister's funeral, the 13th, and a family reunion of some 100 people that I hope I can stay for a little while, but there's a court date to face this goon, and also be facing the Santa Cruz Police Department's lies covering up for this goon. But now I want them to know that I did find that missing audio that disappeared, and I have them telling the guy that they shouldn't have gone that far and hit me, that they went too far. The police telling a goon that they went too far, that's not what they intended, that's not what the police intended. I'm sorry. The police are involved, and you should be ashamed of yourselves.
Thank you, David.
Ashamed of yourselves. This is my democracy. This is my democracy you're talking about.
Thank
my
you,
God.
David.
What behavior? Thank Shame you. On you.
Thank you, David.
You did contact me about this since I interviewed both the people who, between whom he stepped when he was punched out. And he said he wasn't interested in seeing the assailant prosecuted. David is sort of a militant, nonviolent kind of guy. But he was interested in making sure that the police didn't cover up the situation. I actually observed the police interviewing the assailant. Couldn't really get much of it on audio, but I was able to be close enough to comment on it. And I believe I played it on May 18th free radio show, or the radio show soon after that date, if you want to go check it out. David, as far as I know, I think this guy simply was taken away on a probation violation since he was on probation or on parole. It's never went to court. I don't know if David got copies of the police reports. I told him, you know, keep pressing and keep a paper trail. And use it to embarrass them and pressure them further as a matter of general principle to help other people who are in the same situation, which is what has been my general modus operandi, the way I proceed. skipping a few speakers because of time problems. One of them is Brad, who's a one-time city council candidate, a one-time guy who flung my audio recorder across the room. Seems to be very hostile toward me, but he was expressing concerns about the city council's cleaning up the area between, I think it's Laurel Street and the beach along Pacific Avenue, because he thinks that's a neglected area. Now we have Nate Kennedy, who gives a two-minute that people are allowed, urging that there be requirements that businesses open their bathrooms, a certainly laudable thing to demand, but he's talking to the wrong people. And even Rochelle Naroyan, well, people, the person who was interested in this, Pamela Comstock, for all her other reactionary opinions, is off the council. And Crone, who had actually headed the Crone Crapper Commission, as we called the task force on bathrooms in 1999, actually, hasn't done anything about this either.
Thank you. Come on up, Nate.
Toilets everywhere, but not a pot to poop in. What I'm referring to is we have several businesses in the downtown area that have big signs that say no public restrooms for customers only. What I think we need to do is put in a new law, a new ordinance that makes it so that if you have a restroom for customers, that you have to be willing to sell just a receipt for as much as a dollar, just so that the person who says, I want to put my dollar towards this business, but I don't need to sit down and eat right now, need to let that out, not in, just a $1 ticket on a receipt, call it whatever you will, but just where the person sold something, even though it's the receipt, that makes it so they can come in as a customer. Now, one of the big things about this, there are several businesses, which I don't want to name, but they have been really bad about, I go in, all I do is ask if I can use the restroom, and I've been literally kicked out like that from at least two businesses, two pretty prominent ones down here that I boycott, but I'm not going to say who, but
Too bad he won't say who. I, of course, would. And I also note that the city used to fund what's called citizen bathrooms, or that's the word that was used. Don't know, but there was a little visitor restrooms, what they were called, out front. That was the Cafe Gratitude and the Pizza My Heart, and then the Bookshop Santa Cruz, or the Bookshop Coonerty, as I've taken to calling it. Gratitude and Pizza Meyer no longer do this. I think Bookshop Santa Cruz still has the visitor's bathroom sign out, but they discriminate. So, for example, Susan Wirth, Becky Johnson, myself, when we tried to use the bathrooms, have been confronted with hostile threats from people like Neil Coonerty or other staff members who really can't do that. They can't take public money for a publicly accessible bathroom and then refuse to let people in unless there's some legitimate stay away order, criminal concern. Otherwise, they should declare that it is simply, you know, a bathroom for the Bookshop Santa Cruz friends, which in a way it really is. Although I have to say, as I always do when I mention the Bookshop Coonerty, that for decades, far before the earthquake when the Bookshop was at another location, Neil Coonerty and subsequently the Coonerty family has generally allowed people, poor people included, to use their bathroom, and for that I commend them.
Need a way that if you're going along and you've got to go or you're going to explode, right now we just basically, one vendor to the next, push people on until they explode right in the middle of the street and it's all over the place. But yes, the whole idea is that if I want to be a customer somewhere, I should be able to give them a dollar and be a customer and have those rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Nate.
Okay, well, today is the 15th of August, and I'm on the line with activist Scott McHenry. No, it's not Scott. That's that other guy. Scott, yeah, I think it's like Graham Cracker. Scott Graham.
Yeah.
And you're a local resident as well as a longtime Santa Cruzan, but perhaps more important for this interview, you're a person who has spent many, many mornings at the Cafe Pergolesi.
Right, having my morning coffee.
And you know, you live a few blocks away, and you've kept a really close eye on what's going on there. Maybe you just picked it up because you've been there so much. And of course, we know the Pergolesi is closing on the, what is it, the 28th or something, or 27th? Or 26th. And this does not make you happy, right?
Well, yeah, it's kind of a sad thing that the cafe that I've been going to for 20-some years is now closing.
And this is a cafe which, in your estimation, has been probably one of the most egalitarian or most diverse and accessible cafes in town.
Well, yes. I mean, I understand that you have people that hate Cafe Pergolesi because they've been kicked out for one reason or another. And I would challenge those people to go to the coffee roasting company and act the same way they act at Pergolesi's, or go to Cafe Benet, or to the Verve Cafe, or to what's that one that fascist guy owns up there, named after a woman?
Manthri Srinath has.
Oh, yeah, Lulu Carpenter's.
Right.
I like to, like, you know, compare, you know, do a comparative test. Even the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is supposed to be the anarchist cafe, people will get kicked out of if they speak in some other form other than political correctness.
You've got to be politically correct, or else be with people who are able to shield you from the political correctness monitors.
Yeah, I mean, they sit there and the workers eavesdrop on people's conversations in order to find reasons to kick people out. I mean, it's absurd that, you know, they call themselves anarchists when they're actually fascists.
Well, I've always regarded all these cafes, you know, I mean, they are bourgeois businesses. They aren't, you know, real spaces for political change, usually. I mean, you know, people can come in and relax and have a cup of coffee. And they do have cheap coffee at the Sub Rosa, but the prices at the Pergolesi were pretty much, were they low, were they high? What were they compared to other cafes, you know?
I think they were probably about what every other cafe in town was charging for things, you know?
Now, the Pergolesi, of course, had moved from a couple of locations, and you want us to tell us a little bit about the history of the cafe?
Well, at one point it was behind the Bookshop Santa Cruz, where the Bookshop Santa Cruz was before the earthquake, not its current location. There's actually just a hole in the ground there still. And about a year before the earthquake, Priscilla Ma and her parents bought the Cafe Pergolesi from the former owner. Well, Ron Lau, who owned the building and the property, decided not to renew their lease because he was all hot after Tandy Beal, and so he was going to lease the space to Tandy Beal for a cafe, hoping he could hook up with her, which I believe never happened.
And hence he had the Cafe Zeno, or?
Yeah, it turned into the Cafe Zeno. Mm-hmm. And so Priscilla Ma had to move the cafe somewhere else and ended up at the current location, the Dr. Miller's building. And after the earthquake, only cafe open in town for probably 2 or 3 years.
Now, what was Dr. Miller's building before, you know, the Cafe Pergolesi took it over?
Well, it was a, I'm not sure what it was, you know, down through its entire history, but just before the Cafe Pergolesi was in there, there was a breakfast place in there. And then they moved across the street to where the flower place is next door to the Soak and Poke, which was a lawyer's office. And then prior to the lawyer's office, it was actually a little breakfast place.
Now, we should, to give people a context, the earthquake in Santa Cruz happened in 1989, and the Cafe Zeno replaced the Pergolesi, I guess, in 87 or 88 for a year.
In 88.
And I guess Pergolesi has, for the last almost 20 years, been at the location that Cedar and Elm Street, right?
Well, it's more than 20 years, Ron.
That's almost
30.
Sorry about that. 30 years. So,
yeah, close to 30.
Almost, yeah, 29. So, we talked about this, Scott, a little bit before, but the news story on the closing of the Cafe Pergolesi did not really cover, in your perspective, what the real factors were that pressured the closing of the cafe.
Well, my understanding of what's going on here is that 3 or 4 years ago, the police approached, I think it was Jim Howes. He was like the, what do they call him? The
hatchet man?
I don't know. They had a special name for him. He was like the public service officer or something. But anyway, he approached the owner of the cafe and said, listen, there's a big problem here of drug dealing going on, and we think that the main problem is between the sidewalk on Elm Street and your outdoor patio. So we want you to put up, right at that time they just had like a railing up, which, you know, 4 feet high or 3.5 feet high, whatever. And they said, we want you to build an 8-foot fence that's solid. We don't want any openings in it so that the people can't be passing drugs back and forth between the sidewalk and the patio.
Now, in your experience, was there such a problem?
On a very minor level. You know, it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like the heroin dealing that's happening every day on the levee or down in the beach flats, you know. It was people selling, you know, joints or small bags of marijuana, you know.
As I remember it, there was a second entrance, or maybe more than a second entrance, to the Pergolesi courtyard that was open, not just the main entrance, but there was sort of a secondary gate you could go through to get in there.
Well, that was for the wheelchair ramp.
Ah.
In a round back.
I was meaning along Elm Street.
Yeah, but that took you to the back. There was a... That was for wheelchair access. It also was access to the dumpster for the garbage men.
Is that still open now? Because, of course, the cafe will be open for another week or two.
I think it's... they have to have it open for ADA compliance.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they don't have a... even though their bathrooms aren't up to ADA specs, the access to the building is.
Mm-hmm.
To get it back to the story, so the police made them a reckless fence. And then the police, you know, a couple of years later decided that that wasn't enough. And so they set up surveillance over at the Well Within, Soak and Poke, and I guess filmed people doing drug transactions. And then they set an undercover you stop allowing people to smoke cigarettes on your deck, on your patio, we're going to turn you into the ABC and take your your beer and wine license taken away from you. And basically, the police do control that in any given town. You know, they make the recommendation to the ABC whether or not a business should be allowed to serve alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And so for 3 months, they weren't allowed to have anyone smoking on the deck. They all had to smoke on, you know, because I guess the police reasoning for that was they couldn't tell who was smoking weed and who was smoking cigarettes.
About what year was this, Scott? Do you remember?
Oh, that was like last year.
And at some point, weren't all restaurants, or most restaurants, banned from allowing smoking at all?
Yes, but because of the size of their deck, basically, you can't smoke inside and you can't smoke outside within 20 feet of the door. And so the rest of the deck was, you know, people were allowed to smoke. And so the police, because they couldn't tell who was smoking cigarettes, who was smoking weed, I guess they don't get trained on how to, like, figure that out.
They could bring in dogs.
They probably did. I mean, who knows? But anyway, do you think that they should just goose step in there with their dog?
Well, yeah, particularly, you know, that
you're advocating here, Robert?
German Shepherds. You know, that's what I was really hoping for. Maybe remember Officer Brandt had a particular passion for the German Shepherd.
Oh, yeah, while he was beating his wife.
Well, I can't comment on his domestic affairs.
Well, that was the rumor about that guy, you know.
Well, you were a smoker at that time, right? So you had a sense.
No, I was smoking 11 years ago.
So you weren't really a smoker at that time.
No. But, you know, being an ex-smoker, I felt sorry for the people. And, plus, it was just obvious that the police were trying, you know, there was like, they had some sort of vendetta against the Bertolisi. And so one of the other things they were doing was they were telling the owner of the Pergolesi and the Pergolesi staff that, hey, if there's trouble out on the sidewalk with the people that hang out there, call us, we'll come, you know. And so really what the cops were doing, because if they call them, the cops would show up, they wouldn't do anything. And, you know, unless, you know, someone was actively smoking a joint or something, the cops did nothing. And so basically what they were doing was they were adding up how many times they were called to the Bertolisi. And so, you know, I think the paper said that, you know, from the last 4 years or something, they got over 1,000 calls to the Bertolisi, which would be almost a call a day, you know.
So you're suggesting they solicited these calls to some extent.
Well, they wanted the Pergolesi to call them, and in doing that, I tried to warn them. I said, you know, this is like a trap, because they're trying to get you to call them so that if they get a certain number of calls to a business, then they can claim that business is a nuisance business, which is, I think, what they were trying to do with the Pergolesi.
Were they successful, you think?
Well, anyway, I don't know. I mean, I think that what they did, and then what the city then did, which is the city wrote a letter to the owners of the property and told them that the fence along Elm Street was illegal and it needed to come down. And so the owner of the property's son went and talked to the owner of the cafe, and the owner of the cafe said, yeah, but if I take that down, the police are going to take my beer and wine license away, and so I'm not taking it down. If you want to take it down, you take it down. And so they argued back and forth and, I guess, missed the deadline that the city had set for that coming down.
What was the reason that they wanted the fence down?
Because it was erected illegally.
And in the sense of...
Yeah, plus it was higher than, you know, it was higher than it should be, or, you know, it's not, it didn't conform to their, what do they call it? You know, different codes.
And specifications.
Yeah, for, you know, side yard fencing. And,
well, how long did the city allow it to remain until they finally advised the Pergolesi about this?
It was there for about 4 years.
And so suddenly, and which department is responsible for taking this?
The planning department.
And who's that? That's Mike Ferry or something?
I'm not sure who the new person is. The woman that was in charge retired, and so then they had the guy that was second in command, Alex, was in charge for a while, and then they hired somebody new. I'm not sure who that is. You may be more aware of that than I am.
Mm.
Anyway, so what the city's response to that was to send a couple of inspectors in, and they inspected the entire building and the whole property, and came up with a list of 100 or so things that needed to be repaired.
And were these genuine safety concerns, or were these...
Well, I mean, some of them were just minor things that, you know, but some of them were fairly major, you know. Structural issues with the building and the fence, you know, the actual wooden platform that was the patio and the stairs leading into the place. And, you know, there's a lot of problems, and...
But you've never felt unsafe, and you've often sat on that patio, right?
Yeah. Well, the building made it through the earthquake, so it actually made it through two earthquakes. It made it through the big one. And was it 1908 or whatever?
You mean the San Francisco earthquake?
Yeah.
1904 or 5, something like that.
Whatever it was. But anyway... Then the son of the owner of the property came and talked to the owner of the cafe and told him, listen, you're going to have to pay for all this stuff to be fixed. And the owner of the cafe said, well, wait a minute, I don't even have a lease anymore. You haven't renewed my lease since it ran out this spring. Yeah, I guess it was like sometime in the spring or early, you know. Early in the year, the lease expired, and the son of the owner, because the owner is an old woman, and her son kind of has taken charge of everything. And he said, well, you're still going to have to, he goes, even if we fix it, we're going to send you a bill. The owner of the cafe said, well, no, it's like, I don't have a lease. I am on month to month, so I'm not responsible for anything. You are. So supposedly the son of the owner came back a couple days later with a new lease for the owner, which like quadrupled the rent, plus made him responsible for all the repairs that were necessary according to the city.
And of course,
the owner didn't want to sign something like that, and so basically that turned into a 30-day notice to vacate.
I see. And this information comes directly from the owner or from confidential sources? Or
Various bits and pieces from employees and former employees.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't actually seen... or talk to the owner of the Pergolesi since that was announced they were closing. He basically has stayed away from the place.
Well, I notice that none of that really has gotten into the Sentinel. I think they give other explanations which have to do with, I don't know... boy, I'm going to have to review the article before I... But they had three different...
They just say that the... The owner didn't want to renew the lease.
Yeah, I think it was increasing rents and also problems on that corner or something.
Well, that's what the owner of the cafe, he said that, you know, there's a lot more competition now amongst the other cafes in town. There's a lot more cafes in town, and the problems with the beer buddies that hang around the corner, and then the problems with the landlord.
So, how long have you lived in Santa Cruz, Scott?
Oh, on and off since about 74.
Mostly downtown or elsewhere?
Well, mostly downtown. I spent a little time in Felton, some time up in Bonnie June, but mostly I've been in the downtown neighborhood.
Yeah. How would you comment on the change in the community from your arrival in the early 70s to now?
A fascist takeover of the city government led by people like Mike Rockin and Cynthia Matthews and Scott Kennedy.
Any countervailing forces?
Well, there was a brief moment where we had Sugar Fitzmaurice
and Crone.
And sometimes
Byers
to form a majority, but you know, they really got bogged down on a bunch of other crap and didn't really take the opportunity they had there for a couple of years to really undo some of the stuff that Matthews, Kennedy, and Rockin had done. You know, there's this whole litany of anti-fun laws where they, you know, any time people were doing anything that was remotely thought of as being fun, well, let's make a law against that, you know.
Give me some examples.
Well, I mean, there's like, okay, just having a fire on the beach. You know, they made all sorts of laws against that. They, it used to be that you could go out there on Westcliff and hang out all night if you wanted to. You can't do that anymore, you know. And then downtown, just all the rules and regulations that they've put in place downtown, you know, when they first started to do that, at that time, the musicians that worked down, that played downtown, got together with Tom Noddy, and they formed a group that, like, came up with a bunch of rules to self-police themselves.
Yeah, the street performers' voluntary guidelines.
Right. And so that was in place for a long time. And that was like one of the few things that didn't get messed with. And then at some point, oh, I don't know, what was it, 10 years ago?
Yeah, 2002.
Okay, so that's 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So they decided that, oh, we've had enough of these people playing music downtown. It's driving business away. And we need to regulate these people and make them stand in one little square for like 2 hours, and then they have to move to a different square. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just, and this is all, you know, definitely this persnickety kind of attitude of Cynthia Matthews. And, you know, she is the reason we don't have a lot of music at the Civic Center. Before she got on the council, there was anybody that played at the Marin Civic and at the Berkeley, whatever they call that place, that open-air theater in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people would play there, they play Berkeley, and then they play Santa Cruz. It was like they're circling the bay, and it was like, and we dropped out of that. And it was like, the city was making money doing that, but it was too close to Cynthia's house. And she didn't like people going back to their car, you know, because they'd have to park close to her house and walk to the Civic Center. She didn't like people going to their cars, you know, at 11, 12 o'clock at night, and so it became a real problem for her. So her, you know, it was like, oh, let's close down the Civic Center and not allow these kind of things to happen anymore.
What kind of prospects for the future do you see? I take it you're still, you still haven't moved out of town. The rents haven't forced you out.
Well, they're getting that way. I mean, but, yeah, my rent has actually, you know, skyrocketed in the last couple of years.
From what to what?
Well, it's nearly doubled.
You're thinking of moving, or you're still...
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I can't tell you, Robert. I don't know. I mean, I'm, I'm not a soothsayer.
Indeed. Well, hopefully...
You're... Anyway, as far as the, you know, the city of Santa Cruz goes, I think it's just going to get worse and worse. You know, I don't see how we can repair the damage that Rock and Kennedy and Matthews have done to this town. Because nobody, you know, it's just like, you know, after Stalin, Khrushchev came in with his de-Stalinization program. Well, we need a de-Rockinization, de-Matthews, de-Kennedy program, you know?
I hear you. There's some who regard Bryant and Robinson and Pamela Comstock as even worse. And Chirac.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Rock and Kennedy and Matthews put down the foundation for those people to build off of.
Yeah.
And if that foundation hadn't been there, they wouldn't have got to where they were. They wouldn't have been able to do the crap that they were doing.
Any indication of what's going to take the place of the Pergolesi?
Well, the rumor is White Castle is going in there.
You mean a chain?
Yeah, the little hamburger joint from Chicago that makes those tiny little hamburgers.
You mean the Finkel Burgers?
White Castle.
Yeah. Or Black Castle, as we might call it.
Anyway, I guess I'm just going to have to buy my own espresso machine and make my coffee at home or something.
Any place you recommend people go that might carry on the spirit of the Cafe Pergolesi?
I do not know of such a place. I can't even tell you one to go to in Berkeley or San Francisco because those places don't exist anymore either.
Perhaps... Arcata, Eureka.
Yeah, there might be something up there. I haven't been up there in quite some time. So.
Eugene, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking with Scott Graham, who's also been trying to, I guess in your own way, keep an eye on gentrification in your neighborhood. You're right across the street from Laurel Park, which has become considerably gentrified. I hope you haven't been walking through the children's playground without a child with you.
They had rent-a-cops in there all the time, and now they've moved to having
Parks and Rec Rangers.
Yeah, park rangers, one of whom is Cynthia Matthews' son.
Oh, yeah, John Matthews, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he's the only one that actually has a permanent job. The rest of them are hired part-time. So they don't get benefits. He's the only one that has actually got a full-time job where he gets benefits.
Any comments about the labor situation in Santa Cruz as it's changed over the years?
Well, you know, as everywhere else in America, with our fine Republican dominance, the labor movement, you know, the unions are getting weaker and weaker. Jobs here in Santa Cruz don't pay much. Eventually, places like McDonald's are going to have to build barracks above their restaurants places for people to stay in that work there. And they'll have to put up suicide nets around the building so that people won't jump off and kill themselves.
Well, they just go down and have a burger instead, Brad.
Well, okay. Yeah, but if you're cooking the burgers all day and then you like live upstairs above the place and end up with no money at the end of the week to be able to do anything, you might get kind of desperate and jump off the building, you know?
Skydiving kind of thing.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I run out of questions. Have you run out of answers?
I guess so. I mean, listen. Anyway, Robert, it's good talking to you.
You too.
You can edit this down to something that's usable.
Nah, I'll be playing the whole thing, so.
Okay.
You know, and anybody has any comments, do call in 423-4833.